We continue now with the Roman Breviary for winter, January 14th. The feast of St. Hilary, bishop, confessor, and doctor of the church. Hilary was born of a noble family in Aquitaine and was distinguished for his learning and eloquence. He was married early, but the life he led was almost that of a monk. Later, on account of his great virtues, he was made bishop of Poitou, and he discharged the episcopal office so well as to gain the universal praise of the faithful. At that time, the emperor Constantius was persecuting the Catholics by threats, confiscation of property, exile, and every kind of cruelty, unless they would go over to the Arians. Hilary set himself as a firm bulwark against the Arians, thereby bringing on himself all their fury. On this account, they sought many times to ensnare him, and at length, by the treachery of Saturnius, bishop of Arles, he was banished from the council of Bezier into Phrygia. There he raised a dead man to life, and wrote 12 books on the Trinity against the Arians. 4 years after, a council was called at Seleucia, a city of Isauria, at which Hilary was compelled to assist. Thence he set out for Constantinople, where, seeing the extreme danger of the faith, he asked the emperor, in 3 public petitions, for an audience, that he might personally hold a controversy with his adversaries concerning the faith. But Versacius and Valens, Arian bishops, whom Hilary had refuted in writing, were greatly afraid of encountering his learning in person, and persuaded Constantius to restore him to his episcopal see under pretense of showing him honor. Then the Church of Gaul, to use the language of St. Jerome, received him with open arms on his return from the battle with the heretics. St. Martin, who was afterwards bishop of Tours, followed Hilary to his episcopal city, and how much he profited by such a teacher is shown by the sanctity of his afterlife. From that time, he administered the Church of Poitou in perfect peace. He induced the whole of Gaul to condemn the Arian impiety. He wrote many exceedingly learned books, concerning which St. Jerome declares to Lieta that one may read them without fear of error, in these words, "She may run through the books of Hilary without stumbling." He passed to heaven on the Ides of January, January 13th, in the reign of the emperors Valentinian and Valens, in the year of our Lord 369. Hilary was called by many fathers and councils an illustrious doctor of the church, and was honored as such in several dioceses. At length, at the petition of the Synod of Bordeaux, the Supreme Pontiff, Pius IX, after having consulted the Congregation of Sacred Rites, declared and confirmed him to be a doctor of the universal church, and ordered that on his feast all should recite the Mass and office of doctors. January 15. St. Paul, the First Hermit. Paul, the founder and master of hermits, was born in the lower Thebaid. He lost his parents when he was 15 years of age. Not long afterwards, in order to escape the persecution of Decius and Valerian, and to serve God more freely, he withdrew to a cave in the desert. A palm tree afforded him food and raiment, and there he lived to the age of 113. About that time he received a visit from the 90-year-old Anthony on the inspiration of God. Though they had not previously known each other, they greeted one another by their true names. While holding a long conversation on the kingdom of God, a raven, which up to this time had brought half a loaf of bread every day, brought them a whole one. When the raven had left them, Paul said, "Ah, the truly kind and truly merciful Lord has sent us our repast. For 60 years I have daily received half a loaf. Now, because you are come to see me, Christ has doubled the ration for his soldiers." Wherefore, they sat near the fountain, gave thanks, and ate the food. And when they were refreshed, they again returned to the accustomed thanks to God, and spent the night in the divine praises. At daybreak, Paul tells Anthony of his approaching death, and begs him go and bring the cloak which Athanasius had given him, and wrap his body in it. As Anthony was returning from his journey, he saw Paul's soul going up into heaven amidst choirs of angels and a throng of prophets and apostles. When he had reached the hermit's cell, he found the lifeless body. The knees were bent, the head erect, and the hand stretched out and raised towards heaven. He wrapped it in the cloak and sang hymns and psalms over it, according to Christian tradition, for he had not a hole with which to make a grave. Two lions came at a rapid pace from the interior of the desert and stood over the body of the holy man, showing how, in their own way, they lamented his death. Vying with each other, they tore up the earth with their paws until they had made a hole large enough to receive the body of a man. When they had gone, Anthony carried the holy body to the place, threw it in the soil, and arranged the grave after the manner of the Christians. As to the tunic, which Paul had woven for himself out of palm leaves, as baskets are made, Anthony took it away with him, and as long as he lived, wore it on the great days of Easter and Pentecost. January 16th, St. Marcellus the First, Pope and Martyr. Marcellus was a Roman and was pope from the reign of Constantius and Galerius to that of Maxentius. It was by his counsel that the Roman matron Lucina made the Church of God the heir of her property. On account of the increase in the number of the faithful, he established for their use new titular churches in the city and arranged them as new districts for the administration of baptism and penance to converts to the Christian religion and for the burial of the martyrs. All this greatly angered Maxentius, and he threatened Marcellus with severe tortures unless he laid down his pontifical office and offered sacrifice to the idols. Marcellus heeded not the violent words of man and was sent by the emperor to a menagerie to take care of the beasts, which were kept at the public expense. In this place Marcellus spent 9 months of his life fasting and praying without ceasing, and visiting by his letters the churches he could not visit in person. From there he was delivered by some of his clergy and was harbored by the blessed Lucina, in whose house he dedicated a church, which is to this day called the Church of St. Marcellus. Here the Christians assembled for prayer, and the blessed Marcellus preached to them. When Maxentius heard these things, he ordered the wild beast to be brought from the menagerie into the church, and Marcellus to be made their keeper. Sickened by the foul atmosphere and worn out by many hardships, he fell asleep in the Lord. The blessed Lucina had his body buried in the cemetery of Priscilla on the Salarian Way, the 17th of the calends of February, January 16th. He reigned 5 years, 1 month, and 25 days. He wrote a letter to the bishops of the province of Antioch concerning the primacy of the Roman Church, which he proves ought to be called the head of the churches. In the same letter there occurs this passage, that no council may be lawfully celebrated without the authority of the Roman pontiff. He ordained at Rome, in the month of December, 25 priests, 2 deacons, and 21 bishops for various places. January 17th, St. Anthony, Abbot. Anthony was an Egyptian, the child of noble and Christian parents, whom he lost while yet very young. On one occasion, he entered a church and heard these words of the gospel: "If thou wilt be perfect, go and sell what thou hast and give it to the poor." He took these words as if they were addressed to himself personally, for this was the obedience with which he thought every word of the Lord Christ should meet. He therefore sold all his possessions and gave the price to the poor. Being delivered from worldly entanglements, he set himself to lead on earth the life of an angel. But when he had fairly entered upon his difficult course, he felt that besides the shield of faith with which he was armed, he must fortify himself with the other virtues. And so ardent was his desire to possess them that he studied to imitate whomever he saw excelling in any virtue. Nothing, therefore, could exceed his continency and vigilance. He surpassed all in patience, meekness, compassion, humility, manual labor, and the study of the sacred scriptures. He loathed the company and conversation of heretics and schismatics so much, especially the Arians, that he used to say that we should not even go near them. He lay on the ground when necessity obliged him to sleep. Fasting he practiced to such an extent that he added nothing but salt to his bread, and he quenched his thirst with water. He did not refresh himself with either food or drink before sunset, and frequently abstained from food altogether for 2 days. He very often spent the night in prayer. When such a valiant soldier of God sallied forth, the enemy of mankind attacked the most holy youth with manifold temptations, which he overcame by fasting and prayer. Nevertheless, these frequent triumphs over Satan did not lull Anthony into a feeling of security, for he was well aware of the numberless arts of assault possessed by the devil. Therefore he betook himself into the largest desert of Egypt, where such was his daily progress in Christian perfection that the wicked spirits, whose attacks grew more furious as Anthony's resistance grew more resolute, became the object of his contempt, so that he would taunt them with their weakness. When encouraging his disciples to fight against the devil and teaching them with what weapons they would vanquish him, he often said, "Believe me, brethren, Satan dreads the watchings of holy men, their prayers, fasts, voluntary poverty, mercy, and humility, and above all, their ardent love for Christ the Lord, at the mere sign of whose most holy cross he is disabled and put to flight." He became such an object of dread to the devils that many persons throughout Egypt who were possessed by them were delivered by invoking Anthony's name. So great, too, was his reputation for sanctity that Constantine the Great and his sons wrote to him, commending themselves to his prayers. Then, having reached his 105th year, and having a countless number of followers of his rule, he called his monks together, and having instructed them in the perfect discipline of the Christian life, illustrious for holiness and miracles, he passed to heaven on the 16th of the calends of February, January 17th. January 18th, St. Peter's Chair at Rome. When the 12 holy apostles had received from the Holy Ghost the power to speak all languages, they divided the regions of the earth among themselves as fields for their gospel labors. Then was Peter, the prince of the apostles, sent to the capital city of the Roman Empire, that he might make the light shine from the head to the whole body of the civilized nations. At that time, what nation was there that had no representative in Rome? What nations would be ignorant of what Rome had learned? Here were to be refuted the theories of philosophers, here dissolved the vanities of earthly wisdom, here overthrown the worship of devils, here destroyed the impiety of every sacrilege. Here, where superstitious zeal had collected all the error and vanity of the world. Therefore, to this city, O most blessed Peter, thou dost not fear to come, and while thy companions in glory, the Apostle Paul, is still occupied with the government of other churches, thou dost enter this forest of savage beasts, this deep and turbulent ocean, with more boldness than when thou didst walk upon the water. Thou hadst already taught those of the circumcision who had been converted. Thou hadst founded the church of Antioch, the first that bore the noble name of Christian. Thou hadst published the law of the gospel throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. And thou didst not fear for the difficulty of thy work, nor turn back because of thine old age, but didst boldly set up the trophy of the cross of Christ upon those Roman walls, where the providence of God had appointed the throne of thine honor and the glorious scene of thy passion. January 20th, Saints Fabian and Sebastian. Fabian, a Roman, governed the church from the reign of Maximinus to that of Decius. He divided the city into 7 regions, with as many deacons, who had charge of the poor. He created a like number of subdeacons who were to collect the acts of the martyrs written by 7 notaries. He also decreed that every year, on Maundy Thursday, the chrism should be renewed and the old should be burnt. At length, on the 13th of the calends of February, January 20th, after reigning 15 years and 4 days, he was crowned with martyrdom in the persecution of Decius and was buried in the cemetery of Callistus on the Appian Way. He held 5 ordinations in the month of December, in which he made 22 priests, 7 deacons, and 11 bishops for various places. The father of Sebastian was of Narbonne, and his mother a Milanese. He was a great favorite of the Emperor Diocletian, both on account of his noble birth and his personal bravery, and was by him appointed captain of the 1st company of the Praetorian Guards. He was secretly a Christian, and often supported the other Christians both by good offices and money. When some showed signs of yielding under persecution, he so successfully exhorted them that for Jesus Christ's sake many offered themselves to the tormentors. Among these were the brothers Mark and Marcellinus, who were imprisoned at Rome in the house of Nicostratus. The wife of Nicostratus, named Zoe, had lost her voice, but it was restored to her at the prayer of Sebastian. These facts became known to Diocletian, and he sent for Sebastian, and after violently rebuking him, used every means to turn him from his faith in Christ. But as neither promises nor threats availed, he ordered him to be tied to a post and shot to death with arrows. Everyone thought he was dead, and a pious woman named Irene gave orders that his body be taken away during the night and buried. But finding him to be still alive, she took care of him at her house. Not long after, having recovered his health, he went before Diocletian and boldly chided him for his wickedness. At first he was astounded at seeing him, for he believed him dead. But the strange event and Sebastian's sharp rebuke so enraged him that he ordered him to be scourged to death with rods, till at length he gave his soul to God. His body was thrown into a sewer, but Lucina, instructed by Sebastian in a dream where his body was and where he wished it to rest, buried him in the catacombs, where the celebrated church called St. Sebastian was built. January 21st, St. Agnes, Virgin and Martyr. This is a virgin's birthday. Let us then follow the example of her chastity. It is a martyr's birthday. Let us then offer sacrifices. It is the birthday of the Holy Agnes. Let men then be filled with wonder, little ones with hope, married women with awe, and the unmarried with emulation. But how shall I set forth the glory of her whose very name is an utterance of praise? It seems to me that this being, holy beyond her years and strong beyond human nature, received the name of Agnes not as an earthly designation, but as a revelation from God of what she was to be. The Virgin's name is an appellation of modesty. I will call her a martyr. I have praised her enough. Copious is that praise which is not sought after, but is given by others. None is more praiseworthy than she, for whose praise all mouths are fitted. There are as many heralds proclaiming her praise as there are men who speak of her as a martyr. Tradition says that she suffered martyrdom at the age of 13. Detestable indeed the cruelty that spared not so tender an age, but great was the power of faith that could find even children as witnesses. Was there room in this tiny body for a wound? And she, who was hardly big enough to receive a sword wound, possessed that which conquered the sword. She stands fearless amid the blood-stained hands of the torturers, immovable amid the heavy length of rattling chains. She offers her whole body to the sword of the savage soldier, for though she knows not what death is, yet is she ready, if she be dragged unwillingly to the altars, to stretch out her hands to Christ amid the flames, and in those sacrilegious fires She will sign herself with the sign of the victorious Lord. They may fasten her hands and neck in iron fetters, but no shackle can fasten such tender limbs. A strange kind of martyrdom, not yet suitable for punishment, but old enough to win a victory. She cannot easily fight, yet she easily gains a crown. She who suffered the disability of her age, yet played a courageous part. Bride never hastened to the bridal chamber with so glad a heart or so light a step as this virgin to the torture chamber. All were weeping, she was tearless. Very many wondered that she should so carelessly throw away her life, which she had scarcely tasted, as though she had lived it out. Everyone was amazed that she, who was too young to be a witness, even in her own affairs, should bear witness to the deity. What terrors her executioner make use of to frighten her, what fair words to coax her, what vows that his nuptials with her might come to pass. But she says, "This is an insult to my spouse, to expect me to comply. He who first chose me will receive me. Why, O assassin, dost thou delay? Let this body perish, which can be loved by eyes which I do not want." She stood, she prayed, she bowed her head. You could have observed the executioner trembling as if he himself were the condemned. The executioner's right hand shaking, faces growing pale with the fear of danger to another when the girl had no fear of her own danger. Therefore you have a double martyrdom in one victim, modesty and religion. She remained a virgin and achieved martyrdom. January 22nd. Saints Vincent and Anastasius, Martyrs. Vincent was born at Huesca in Granada in Spain. He was given to study from his earliest years and learned sacred letters from Valerius, Bishop of Saragossa. He was accustomed to deliver discourses for his prelate, who, owing to an impediment in his speech, was not able to preach himself. When this came to the ears of Dacian, prefect of the province, under Diocletian and Maximian, he had Vincent arrested at Saragossa and brought him before him in Valencia in bonds. The saint was scourged and afterwards tormented on the rack in the presence of numerous spectators, but neither torture, threats, nor fair words could bend his resolution. He was then laid on a grating over hot coals, his flesh mangled with iron hooks, and white-hot plates of metal applied to the wounds. The still-breathing remains were taken back to a prison and laid on broken potsherds so that when he was overcome with sleep, his naked body might be tortured by their sharp edges. But while he was shut up in this gloomy confinement, a most brilliant light penetrated the whole prison. All who were present were astonished beyond measure at this light, and the jailer informed Dacinius of what had occurred. Vincent was then ordered to be taken out and put on a soft bed, for the governor thought that by luxuries he could gain over him whom he had failed to conquer by tortures. But Vincent's invincible spirit, strengthened by its faith and hope in Jesus Christ, overcame all efforts, and after triumphing over fire and sword and hideous tortures, he took his flight to heaven, there to receive the crown of martyrdom on the 11th of the calends of February, January 22nd. His body was thrown out and denied burial, but a raven marvelously defended it by its claws and beak against birds of prey and a wolf. Dacinius, hearing this, ordered it to be thrown into a deep part of the sea, but by a fresh prodigy it was washed ashore, and the Christians gave it burial. Anastasius, a Persian monk, having made a pilgrimage to the holy places in Jerusalem in the reign of the Emperor Heraclius, courageously endured at Caesarea in Palestine imprisonment and scourgings for the religion of Christ. Not long after, being subjected to various tortures by the Persians for the same cause, King Chosroes ordered him to be beheaded, together with 70 other Christians. His relics were carried first to Jerusalem, to the monastery where he had professed the monastic life. Afterwards, translated to Rome, they were placed in the monastery at the Salvian Waters. January 23rd, St. Raymond of Penafort, Confessor. Blessed Raymond, born at Barcelona of the noble family of Penafort, was taught the rudiments of the Christian faith when still a boy. His uncommon gift of mind and body seemed to indicate some great natural ability, for while still young, he taught the humanities in his native city. Later, he went to Bologna, where he applied himself with much diligence to the exercises of piety and to the study of canon and civil law. He there received a doctor's cap and interpreted the sacred canons to the admiration of all men. His holiness attained such wide renown that Berengarius, Bishop of Barcelona, when returning to his diocese from Rome, visited Bologna on his way in order to see Raymond, and after most earnest entreaties, induced him to accompany him to his native city. He was soon made canon and provost of that church, and became a model to the clergy and the people by his uprightness, modesty, learning, and meekness. His tender devotion to the Virgin Mother of God was extraordinary, and he ever did his utmost to promote her devotion and honor. When he was about 45 years of age, he made his solemn profession in the order of friars preachers, and drilled himself like a recruit in the exercise of every virtue, but above all in charity to the poor, and mainly to the captives taken by the infidels. It was by his exhortation that Saint Peter Nolasco, who was his penitent, was induced to devote all his riches to his most pious work. The Most Blessed Virgin appeared to Peter, as also to Blessed Raymond, and to James the First, King of Aragon, telling them that it would be most pleasing to herself and her only son if in their honor an order of religious men were founded, whose mission would be to deliver captives from the tyranny of the infidels. Whereupon, after deliberating together, they founded the Order of Our Lady of Mercy for the ransom of captives, and Blessed Raymond drew up certain rules of life well adapted to the vocation of that order. Some years after, he obtained their approbation from Gregory the Ninth, and made St. Peter, to whom he gave the habit with his own hands, first general of the order. He was summoned to Rome by Gregory the Ninth and appointed his chaplain, penitentiary, and confessor. It was by Gregory's orders that he collected, in the volume called the Decretals, the ordinances of the Roman pontiffs, which up to that time were only to be found scattered among the records of various councils and churches. He firmly refused the Archbishopric of Tarragona, which was offered him by the Pope himself, and having been chosen Master General of the whole order of friars preachers, he discharged the duties of that office in holiness for 2 years, and then resigned it. It was by his advice that James, King of Aragon, established the office of the Holy Inquisition in his dominions. He was distinguished by many miracles, of which the chief was that, when returning to Barcelona from the island of Majorca, he spread his cloak upon the sea and passed over the waters on it, accomplishing the whole distance of 160 miles in 6 hours, and finally entering his convent through closed doors. He attained the age of nearly 100 years and fell asleep in the Lord in the year of salvation, 1275. His name was enrolled by Clement the Eighth among those of the saints. January 24th, St. Timothy, Bishop and Martyr. Timothy was born at Lystra in Lyconia. His father was a Gentile, his mother a Jewess. When the Apostle Paul came into those parts, Timothy was already a Christian. The Apostle had heard much of his holy life, and was thereby induced to take him as a companion of his travels. But on account of the Jewish converts to the faith of Christ, who were aware that Timothy's father was a Gentile, he administered to him the rite of circumcision. As soon as they both arrived at Ephesus, the apostle ordained him bishop of that church. the apostle addressed two of his epistles to him, one from Laodicea and the other from Rome. Thus confirmed in his pastoral office, he could not endure to see sacrifice which is due to God alone offered to the images of devils, and finding that the people of Ephesus were sacrificing victims to Diana on her festival. He strove to make them stop their impiety, but they stoned him. The Christians rescued him nearly dead and carried him to a mountain near the town, where on the 9th of the calends of February, January 24th, he fell asleep in the Lord. Today we keep our annual celebration of the triumph of the blessed martyr Timothy and the church, while rejoicing in his glory, places him before us that we may follow in his footsteps. If we suffer with him, we shall be glorified with him. There are two things to be considered in this glorious combat, namely, the hard-hearted cruelty of the torturer and the unconquered patience of the martyr. The cruelty of the torturer, that we may detest it, the patience of the martyr, that we may imitate it. Hear what the psalmist says in reproof of wickedness: "Be not emulous of evildoers, for they shall shortly wither away as grass." But the apostle teaches patience with the wicked in the words, "Patience is necessary for you, that you may receive the promise." January 25th, Conversion of St. Paul. Today we read in the Acts of the Apostles how Paul the Apostle was changed from a persecutor of the Christians to a herald of Christ. Christ struck down the persecutor that he might make him a doctor of the church. He wounded him and healed him. He slew him and raised him to life. The lamb was slain by the wolves and made lambs of the wolves. Now was fulfilled in Paul what was clearly spoken in prophecy by the patriarch Jacob, when he blessed his sons, laying hands on those present, but looking forward to the future. For Paul, as he himself says, was of the tribe of Benjamin. And when Jacob, blessing his sons, came to bless Benjamin, he said of him, "Benjamin, a ravenous wolf." What then? Will he always be a ravening wolf? God forbid. But he who in the morning seizes the prey, in the evening divides the food. This was fulfilled in the Apostle Paul, because it was foretold of him. Now, if you please, let us hear how he seized the prey in the morning and divided the food in the evening. Morning and evening for him signify, so to speak, earlier and later. So therefore we take it, earlier he seizes, later he divides the food. Consider this seizer of prey. Saul, it is said, received letters from the chief priests, and went forth to seize the Christians wherever he could find them, and lead them without fail to the priests for punishment. He went, breathing and gasping out slaughter, that is, seizing in the morning. For when Stephen, the first martyr, was stoned for the name of Christ, Saul was undoubtedly present, and in such manner was he present with the stoners that it did not content him merely to cast stones with his own hands. For it was as if he made use of the hands of all casting stones, when he himself took care of their garments, venting his rage more completely by helping them all than if he had merely stoned him with his own hands. We have heard, he seized in the morning. Let us see how he devised the food in the evening. He was struck down by the voice of Christ from heaven, and forbidden from above to rage on further. He fell on his face, first to be prostrated, then to be raised up, first to be wounded, then to be healed. January 26. Saint Polycarp, Bishop and Martyr. Polycarp, a disciple of the Apostle John, who appointed him bishop of Smyrna, was venerated as the head of all Asia, because he had seen and had for teachers some of the apostles and those who had seen the Lord. He went to Rome during the reign of the emperor Antoninus Pius, and in the pontificate of Anicetus, about certain questions regarding the date of Easter. While there, he brought back to the faith several believers who had been misled by the teaching of Marcion and Valentine. On a certain occasion, he chanced to meet Marcion, who said to him, "Do you know us?" Polycarp replied, "Yes, I know you as the firstborn of the devil." But sometime after the reign of Marcus Antonius and Lucius Aurelius Commodus, in the fourth persecution after Nero, he was condemned to the flames at Smyrna, in the amphitheater, before the proconsul on his throne, and with all the people clamoring against him. He wrote a very useful letter to the Philippians, which is still read in the assemblies of Asia. "Princes have persecuted me without cause, and my heart hath been in awe of thy words. Rightly does the martyr say that he suffers persecution unjustly, for he has committed no robbery, oppressed no man, shed no blood, and had no thought of adultery. He is not liable to the laws, and he is punished more grievously than a robber. He speaks justly, and men will not listen. He speaks words of salvation, and men fight against him, so that he can well say, 'When I spoke to them, they fought against me without cause.' Thus he suffers persecution without cause, though no sin is laid to his charge. And yet men fight against him. They fight against him as an evildoer, although in his confession of God he is worthy of praise. They fight against him as a sorcerer, though all his glory is in the name of the Lord, for that love is the source from which spring all virtues. In truth, they fight against him in vain when they accuse him of impiety amongst the impious and unbelieving, for he is a master in the faith. But one against whom men fight without cause ought to be brave and steadfast. How then does the martyr add, 'And my heart hath been in fear of thy words'? Fear belongs to the weak, the timid, and the fearful. But there is a weakness which is unto salvation, and a fear which is holy. Fear the Lord, all ye his saints, and blessed is the man that feareth the Lord. Why is he called blessed? Because he shall delight exceedingly in his commandments." January 28th, Saint Peter Nolasco, Confessor. Peter Nolasco was born at Racadon, near Carcassonne in France, of noble parents, and showed a remarkable love towards his neighbor. It was considered a foreshadowing of this virtue when as a child he was crying in his cradle and a swarm of bees lighted upon him and formed a honeycomb on his right hand. He lost his parents early in life. The Albigensian heresy was at that time making its way into France. Peter, detesting that sect, sold his estates and withdrew into Spain. This gave him an opportunity to fulfill a vow which he had taken long before at the shrine of Our Lady of Montserrat. After this, he went to Barcelona, and having there spent all his money in ransoming the faithful of Christ from slavery to their enemies, he said often that he would sell himself to be free them, or that he would like to be bound by their chains. How agreeable to God was the desire of this holy man, the following event showed. He was one night praying and deeply considering in his mind help for the Christians languishing in captivity, when the Blessed Virgin appeared and suggested that he would be most dear to her son and herself if he would institute in her honor an order of religious men who would especially devote themselves to the ransom of captives from the infidels. He complied immediately with this heavenly suggestion and founded the Order of Our Lady of Ransom for the Redemption of Captives, aided by St. Raymond of Penafort and James I, King of Aragon, both of whom had that same night received that like revelation from the Mother of God. The religious of this order are bound by a fourth vow to remain as hostages in the pagans' power, if necessary, for freeing the Christians. Having taken a vow of virginity, he kept his chastity perpetually unspotted. He excelled marvelously in patience, humility, abstinence, and other virtues. He foretold future events by the illustrious gift of prophecy. One especially noteworthy may be mentioned. When King James was attacking Valencia, occupied by the Moors, He first obtained assurance from Peter that he would gain a victory. He was frequently counseled with the apparition of his guardian angel and of the Virgin Mother of God. At length, worn out with old age, receiving a revelation of his approaching death, he fell sick, and being refreshed with the holy sacraments, exhorting his brethren to love towards captives, and devoutly reciting the psalm, "I will praise thee, O Lord, with my whole heart," at the words, "The Lord has sent redemption to his people," he gave up his soul to God at midnight of Christmas Eve in the year 1256. Alexander VII commanded this feast to be kept on January 31st. We will continue with the winter edition of the Roman Breviary on tape number 3.